every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now. Bangladesh's prime minister has resigned and fled to India after weeks of student-led protests. We'll get an update from Amnesty International. Then as tension rises over the contested results of Venezuela's presidential election, we'll host a debate between sociologist Edgardo Lander in Caracas and Nina Farnia, who is an election observer there with the National Lawyers Guild. Finally, a bombshell Washington Post investigation into whether Donald Trump took a $10 million bribe from the Egyptian government days before Trump took office.
We agree on so many things. I just want to let everybody know, in case there was any doubt, that we are very much behind President El-Sisi. He's done a fantastic job.
We'll speak with Washington Post reporter Carol Lenig, who broke the story. And we'll talk to a member of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows about why they supported a plea deal with the alleged mastermind of the 9/11 attacks that Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin just revoked. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina has resigned and fled to India after weeks of student-led protests. Bangladesh's army has announced an interim government will be formed to run Bangladesh. Earlier today, crowds stormed Hasina's official residence in Dhaka to celebrate her ouster. She'd led Bangladesh since 2009. Her father was Bangladesh's first president. On Sunday, police violently cracked down as tens of thousands of protesters took to the streets. Almost 100 people died on Sunday, bringing the death toll in recent weeks to over 300. Most of those killed have been student protesters. Hasina resigned as protesters vowed to defy a military curfew and stay in the streets.
Nobody can stop us from marching today. If we turn back and face them once, we will liberate Bangladesh. And I want to tell my armed forces, brothers, not to align with the autocrat. Either you're with the people or stay neutral.
We'll have more on Bangladesh after headlines. The U.S. has sent additional military forces, warships and fighter jets to the Middle East as Israel braces for a possible retaliatory attack by Iran and Hezbollah. Last week, Israel assassinated Hamas's political chief, Ismail Haniyeh, in Tehran, as well as a top Hezbollah commander in Beirut. A number of countries, including the U.S., France and the U.K., have urged their citizens to leave Lebanon as fears grow of a broader regional war. President Biden is planning to meet with his national security team today. In Gaza, at least 30 Palestinians were killed Sunday when Israel attacked two schools sheltering displaced people in Gaza City. Officials in Gaza said 80% of the victims were children. The attack came a day after Israel struck another school in Gaza City, killing 16 people. Israeli forces also attacked the courtyard of Deir Abbas al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital, where displaced Palestinians were living in a makeshift tents, which caught on fire. At least five Palestinians died.
They said Al-Aqsa Hospital was safe, and we stayed in Al-Aqsa Hospital because it was supposed to be safe. We were sleeping, believing it was safe, and suddenly a rocket hit, setting the tent on fire. A woman who was this child's mother was killed. She was hit by a shrapnel in her back and died on the spot, martyred where she stood.
Israel also carried out airstrikes on the occupied West Bank Saturday, killing nine Palestinians in the city of Tulkarm. Hamas said three of the victims were members of its military wing. In the UK, unrest is growing following the deadly stabbing of three girls last week in the northwestern town of Southport. At least eight other children and two adults were injured in the attack on a children's dance class, many of them still in critical condition. The attack stoked violent far-right protests across Britain after early misinformation identified the suspect as an immigrant living in the UK without documentation. The 17-year-old suspect was, in fact, born in Cardiff to Rwandan parents. Over the weekend, rioters raided and set fire fire to hotels used to shelter asylum seekers in northern England. Violent protests also led to some 150 arrests, with incidents reported in Hull, Liverpool, Bristol and Belfast, among others. Anti-fascist protesters have also gathered to counter the white nationalists. On Sunday, Prime Minister Keir Starmer condemned the, quote, far-right thuggery.
People in this country have a right to be safe. And yet, we've seen Muslim communities targeted. Attacks on mosques,
Prime Minister's residence,
other minority communities
declaring that 16 years of autocracy has come to an end. And we have made sure that we are victorious.
In Bangladesh, the parliament's been dissolved a day after the Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina, resigned and fled to India following weeks of student-led protests. We'll go to Dhaka for the latest. Then it's primary day in Missouri, where APEC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, and its affiliates have spent over $8 million in an effort to defeat Democratic Congressmember Cori Bush, who's been a vocal critic of Israel's war on Gaza.
We grieve and mourn the depraved, unconscionable attacks on places of refuge, including schools and health facilities and places of worship as the world watches.
We'll speak to Michael Berg, his piece in The Nation, I'm a St. Louis Jew, here's why I'm backing Cori Bush. But first, Google is an illegal monopoly. That's what a federal judge ruled Monday in what's being described as the biggest antitrust case of the 21st century. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. UN's human rights chief and the head of EU foreign policy are the latest leaders to call for urgent de-escalation in the Middle East amidst reports of a possibly imminent retaliatory attack from Iran against Israel and mounting fears of an all-out regional war. President Biden met with his national security team Monday, and the U.S. CENTCOM commander arrived in Israel earlier today. Foreign embassies are evacuating their citizens from Lebanon and the region. Meanwhile, U.S. military personnel were injured Monday in a suspected rocket attack on al-Assad air base in Iraq. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke Monday.
We are engaged in intense diplomacy, pretty much round the clock, with a very simple message. All parties must refrain from escalation. All parties must take steps to ease tensions. Escalation is not in anyone's interests. It will only lead to more conflict, more violence, more insecurity.
Israel's killed at least 8 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank amidst an ongoing bloody raid in Jenin and other sites. In Tubas, Israeli forces killed at least 4 people. This is the brother of one of the victims.
His 3-year-old son saw his father on the floor bleeding. He is 3 years old. He's the only one who saw his father bleeding and told us what he saw.
Meanwhile, Israel's finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, suggested starving the entire Gaza Strip to death could be justified. He told a conference, quote, nobody will let us cause 2 million civilians to die of hunger, even though it might be justified and moral, until our hostages are returned, unquote. Smotrich also repeated the Israeli government's goal of, quote, removing the threat, unquote, of Palestinian statehood. The UN reported child malnutrition in the Gaza Strip jumped nearly 50% in July over the previous month due to Israel's relentless attacks and total blockade. Bangladesh's president has dissolved parliament, clearing the way for new elections to take place following the resignation of Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina, who fled the country Monday after weeks of student-led protests. Just hours after Hasina's departure, the Bangladeshi president, Mohammed Shahabuddin, ordered the release of jailed opposition leader Khaleda Zia, a longtime rival of Hasina. The streets of Dhaka erupted in celebration Monday in response to her ouster. As the military is set to appoint an interim government, student leaders have called on Bangladeshi Nobel Peace Prize laureate Mohammed Yunus to be at its head.
We will not accept any other government other than the one proposed by us. We will not accept the government supported by the military or the fascists. Any proxy government or government against the people will not be accepted.
Bangladeshi security forces have killed over 400 people since anti-government protests began in June, including some 100 protesters over the weekend before Sheikh Hasina stepped down. We'll go to Dhaka later in the broadcast. In Washington, D.C., a federal judge ruled Monday Google's illegally maintained a monopoly over internet searches by paying billions of dollars to Apple and other smartphone companies and web browsers to be their default search engine. The historic decision comes after a lawsuit brought by the Justice Department and a group of attorneys general from 38 states and territories. It's the largest antitrust lawsuit brought by the U.S. government against a major tech company since the DOJ sued Microsoft over 20 years ago. Judge Amit Mehta wrote in his ruling, quote, Google is a monopolist, and it's acted as one to maintain its monopoly. We'll have more on this story after headlines. The Democratic National Committee's virtual roll call vote ended with Kamala Harris receiving 99% of delegate votes. Kamala Harris will be announcing her vice presidential pick this morning ahead of a rally in Philadelphia later today, where she'll appear with her running mate. The two finalists are reportedly Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro and Minnesota Governor Tim Walz. In other election news, progressive Missouri Congressmember Cori Bush faces re-election in her primary race today after APAC spent some $9 million to unseat her and boost her challenger, St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. In Arizona, Donald Trump's former campaign lawyer Jenna Ellis has flipped and agreed to cooperate with prosecutors in Arizona's fake elector case. Ellis, who worked to overturn Trump's 2020 loss in Arizona, will avoid jail time as part of the deal, where she could testify against the 17 remaining defendants in the case, including Rudy Giuliani and Mark Meadows. In financial news, Japanese shares rebounded today after global stock markets plunged Monday as fears of a U.S. recession triggered a massive sell-off. It was the worst day for the Japanese stock market since a crash in 1987. Stocks also rallied across Europe today. In July, the U.S. added 114,000 jobs, and the unemployment rate rose to 4.3%, a much dimmer report than economists predicted. Last week, the Fed kept interest rates at a two-decade high ahead of expected cuts over this fall and winter. As temperatures soar across the globe this summer, the World Health Organization says extreme heat is responsible for over 175,000 deaths each year in Europe. Here in the U.S., western states continue to battle a raging wildfire season. So far this year, wildfires have burned more than 4.5 million acres across the United States. In the southeast, Tropical Storm Debbie is making its way across Georgia and coastal South Carolina after killing at least four people as it barreled through Florida on Monday. In Brazil, a group of armed assailants and farmers over the weekend attacked indigenous communities that had reclaimed stolen land in the state of Mato Grosso do Sul. The violent rampage left at least 10 Guarani and Kaua people injured in the attackers as the attackers fired gunshots, rubber bullets, and set ablaze tents that had been placed by indigenous people on their land. More Brazilian authorities have been deployed to the region in response while prosecutors consider opening a criminal investigation. Similar attacks against indigenous communities in Mato Grosso do Sul near the Brazilian Amazon have been on the rise as farmers and others exploit land to plant soy for export or raise cattle to produce beef. The U.S. has abandoned its last military base in Niger and completed the withdrawal of its forces, ending a years-long failed counterterrorism mission in the West African country and fulfilling a crucial demand by Niger's ruling military junta. Niger's expulsion of U.S. troops follows a military coup a year ago. Niger's former colonizer, France, was also forced to pull out its troops last year. In Nigeria, anti-government protests against economic inequality and hunger are continuing, defying a request by President Bola Tinubu and a deadly crackdown by security forces. Half a dozen Nigerian states have imposed curfews. At least 13 people have been killed since the nationwide protests started Thursday last week.
here, which symbolizes hunger. There is terrible hunger in Nigeria. Do you understand? And my appearance today is to showcase the anger in me. Do you understand?
In other news about Nigeria, the Nigerian Foreign Ministry joined other nations in warning their citizens about travel to the United Kingdom amid worsening far-right anti-immigrant riots. Kenya, Malaysia, and Indonesia also issued safety warnings as the unrest continued last night, 1 week after misinformation about a mass stabbing triggered the far-right riots. A man in Belfast was hospitalized after being attacked in a suspected hate crime. In Olympics news, Brazilian gymnast Rebeca Andrade and U.S. gymnast Simone Biles and Jordan Chiles made history Monday as they accepted their medals for the first ever all-black podium in either men's or women's gymnastics. Simone Biles has won 3 golds and a silver in Paris, making her the most decorated U.S. gymnast in Olympic history. Biles and Chiles bowed down to Andrade, who had not one, not two, but 3 torn ACLs, and yet still ultimately got gold. In other news from the Paris Games, Algerian boxer Iman Ekhlif has called for an end to bullying in sports after suffering a torrent of abuse amidst invasive and hateful speculation over so-called gender eligibility requirements. Khalif is guaranteed at least a bronze medal after winning a match Saturday. Meanwhile, Belgium withdrew from the mixed relay triathlon Monday, and Switzerland had to reorder its roster after both countries' athletes became sick after completing races in the Seine River last week. And Japan is marking the 79th anniversary of the U.S. dropping the world's first atomic bomb in Hiroshima, killing some 140,000 people. 3 days later, on August 9, 1945, the U.S. dropped another atomic bomb on the Japanese city of Nagasaki, killing an estimated 74,000 people. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida spoke earlier today.
Japan is the only country to have been hit by nuclear weapons during a war. It is our mission to continue to make an effort to realize a world free from nuclear weapons.
Ahead of the annual peace memorial ceremony in Hiroshima, Palestinian rights protesters gathered to condemn the presence of Israel's ambassador to Japan amidst the war on Gaza. Protesters chanted, quote, "Israel is not welcome here in Hiroshima." And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show with what's being described as the biggest antitrust case of the 21st century. On Monday, a federal judge ruled Google has illegally maintained a monopoly over the internet search market. In his ruling, Judge Amit Mehta wrote, quote, "Google is a monopolist, and it has acted as one to maintain its monopoly," unquote. The decision came in a lawsuit brought by the Justice Department. On Monday, Attorney General Merrick Garland said, quote, "This victory against Google is an historic win for the American people. No company, no matter how large or influential, is above the law," unquote. We're now joined by Matt Stoller, Director of Research at the American Economic Liberties Project. He's the author of Goliath, the 100-year war between monopoly power and democracy. He also writes the monopoly-focused newsletter, Big. Matt, welcome back to Democracy Now! This is an historic moment when it comes to monopolies in this country. Can you describe the significance of this ruling?
Yeah, well, this is a huge deal. It's basically a question. This whole, for the last couple of years, as we've been investigating these dominant corporations, the question has been, who runs this country? Is it a small group of people that make choices about what we can see online, or is it the public through competition? And the decision of this judge to say that this $2 trillion giant that controls the internet, controls what we see, controls our phones, or a lot of what's on our phones, controls mapping, controls email, controls all of these ways that we talk and communicate with each other, has huge political power, that what they've been doing is illegal and is going to be remedied. That's a huge deal. It's just, and people think about this as kind of a technical question, monopolies and business and blah, 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 blah. This is actually the foundation of how we live as a society. And this decision is really, really good.
And Matt, if you can, for people who have not followed the case, what is the essence of the judge's ruling in terms of how the illegality involved in Google's actions as opposed to just it having a superior product for searching?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. That's kind of the key to the case. So everybody uses Google. It's the best search engine, and everybody knows that. The question is why? And the allegation from the government is that Google, when you make a search engine, you know, you can look for things and a search engine will deliver you results. Every time that search engine has a user, it can see what that user does and it tweaks the results and makes them better. So the use of the product improves the product. And what Google was doing is they were buying up all of the outlets for distribution. They were paying Apple, they were paying Mozilla, Verizon, everywhere you might get access to a search engine, and saying, we're going to give you money to preload Google as the search engine there and not put anyone else there. And what that did is it made it so that nobody else could get enough users to make their search engine good enough to compete with Google. So Google is the best product. It has the best quality. But that's because of their scheme to monopolize, to put the preset defaults everywhere. Basically, all the shelf space in the entire world for search engines, Google bought it up. And the judge said, no, you can't do that. And now we're going to go to the next stage to figure out, right, what do we do about their monopolization scheme?
And didn't the judge also rule that that monopoly allowed them to artificially inflate what they were charging advertisers as well?
Yes. Yeah, so the specific harm, right, the monopolization was in controlling the access to distribution of search engines and thwarting rivals. But what Google did with that monopoly was it raised prices for advertisers. And what that means is there's a tax. Google is a $2 trillion company. The reason it is so valuable is because it effectively can tax every company in the economy for marketing. So if you need to get your information out, you have to give a VIG to Google. Google's one of a few companies like that. And that's what they did. And they kept raising prices, and that's why they're so valuable.
So, Matt, what happens now?
Well, so, the next stage is that this stage of the trial was to figure out if Google had violated the law. And Google has violated the law. That we know. The next stage, right, which is going to be a new kind of trial, is what's called the remedy phase, where the government is going to say, here's what we want you to do to fix the problem. Get rid of the exclusive contracts, break up the company, share the data, delete the data, whatever it is. And they're going to argue about that for a while. And then the judge is going to make a decision in how to actually fix the problem, the remedy phase. At the same time, or maybe before or maybe after, because you know these are all questions up in the air, Google's going to appeal, and the appeal will probably go to all the way to the Supreme Court. So in the next couple of years, we can imagine that there's going to be decisions about what's going to happen to Google's business model, and then also whether this decision will be upheld. In a broader context, though, tomorrow, everyone in Silicon Valley is going to start saying, including people at Apple, are going to say, all right, we can no longer have these agreements with Google where we get money. I mean, Apple is getting $20, $30 billion a year from Google. That agreement, they're going to have to plan to not get that money anymore. So they're going to probably create their own search engine. So this is going to start, and venture capitalists, investors, entrepreneurs are going to say, all right, this is a different moment. We're going to start to innovate. And more broadly, these kind of arrangements that Google has had with all these companies and buying up all the shelf space, they're now considered illegal, orchestrated by big companies across the economy. So every big business CEO is going to get a memo saying, hey, this Google thing happened. Are we doing anything similar to Google? And if we are, maybe we should sort of pull back and for fear of being sued for monopolization. So it's going to have huge effects across the internet for Google, and then also across the economy in the way big business operates.
And Matt, Google is not the only company the Biden administration's antitrust division has gone after. They also have cases pending against Amazon, Meta, Apple. Could you talk about this this effort by the Biden administration to really clamp down on the tech sector especially?
Yeah. So also they're suing Ticketmaster, which I think is the most fun lawsuit, but they have lawsuits against, you know, the biggest companies in the world, which are companies in the tech sector. They also have cases against in meatpacking, rent fixing, seeds and chemicals across the healthcare, across the board. But the big ones are the ones you mentioned, which are the multi-trillion-dollar companies. And the idea there is that you have a series of gatekeepers, of choke points, who control this, the most important part of our economic order, or these are the pace setters for our economic order, which are the tech companies. And what the Biden administration is trying to do is they're trying to say, no, look, the internet has to be an open place where we can actually communicate with one another and sell goods and ideas to one another without these corrupt monopolistic intermediaries. And to break that their control, what we're going to do is we're going to force allowing competitors to come into the market and push aside these middlemen by saying, not, you know, you guys can't do business anymore, but you can't engage in coercive behavior to thwart rivals. And this Google decision is the first major decision in a government case saying, yes, big tech comes under the antitrust laws. They can't do what they've been doing. And we're going to see cases against Facebook, Amazon, Apple, and then also more cases against Google as well.
Matt, in our last minute, can you also talk about the recent attacks on Lina Khan, the commissioner of the Fair Trade Commission? Several billionaire Democratic Party donors, including LinkedIn co-founder Reid Hoffman and Barry Diller, have publicly pushed Kamala Harris to fire Khan, who has led Biden's antitrust efforts. Hoffman sits on the board of Microsoft, which was sued by the FTC.
Yeah. So one of the big risks to this these cases is the next administration. So Trump actually originally brought the Google case, but he has sort of turned away from his whatever economic populism he had in 2016 in this campaign. And Kamala Harris is known to be close to big tech oligarchs in Silicon Valley, including Reid Hoffman, founder of LinkedIn, board of Microsoft under investigation, and, you know, a bunch of others. And so the risk here is that we don't know who's going to win, but whoever does win, they might want to settle this case on the cheap. And honestly, I'm very worried about that. I mean, there are reasons to think that that won't happen, but I don't think there's any evidence at all that Kamala Harris is behind these cases or is behind constraining big business. I think she's very clearly friendly to big business. The campaign is doing fundraising events with these billionaires. They're not saying anything. And the signpost of it is that the Lina Khan, who's the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, is kind of the most famous representative of this new framework of addressing concentrated corporate power, a new trade regime, a new way of saying, you know, business really should underlie productive activities. It shouldn't just be extractive. You know, Lina Khan is the symbol of that new framework. And Kamala Harris's backers and her close advisors really don't like Lina Khan, and they don't like this whole framework. And so that's going to be a really big fight, assuming that Kamala Harris wins, which we don't know. But it's going to be a fight, regardless of who wins, to maintain and expand this effort to really restore democracy in the commercial sector.
I want to thank you, Matt Stoller, so much for being with us, director of research at the American Economic Liberties Project, author of the book Goliath, The 100-Year War Between Monopoly, Power, and Democracy. Coming up, we go to Bangladesh. The parliament's been dissolved a day after the prime minister resigned and fled to India following weeks of student-led protests and the killing of hundreds of students. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We're going to turn right now to Bangladesh. History is being made there. Student-led protests forced the Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina, to resign and flee to India Monday. Earlier today, the Bangladeshi president dissolved the parliament. The president also ordered the opposition leader, Khaleda Zia, to be released from prison where she's been held since 2018. The military said an interim government will be formed, but its makeup remains unclear. Student protest leaders are calling for the Nobel Peace Laureate, Muhammad Yunus, to head the interim government. Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina's decision to resign came after weeks of protest and intense